from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. For nearly 150 years, trains have been chugging up and down the peninsula. In the old days, it was the Southern Pacific, more recently, Caltrain. But Caltrain is facing tough times, a huge budget deficit that may cut train service nearly in half, leaving only commute hour train service intact. Tomorrow morning, a group called Friends of Caltrain will hold a community meeting in San Carlos to talk about what might be done to preserve train service that currently runs from Gilroy to San Francisco. Red ink versus riding the rails. Our topic next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. From Gilroy to San Jose to San Francisco, Caltrain links peninsula cities large and small, Menlo Park and Millbrae, San Carlos and San Bruno, spots where peninsula and South Bay residents can climb aboard and head to work, school, or even a Giants game. But now Caltrain is facing a crisis. A $30 million budget deficit threatens to cut train service nearly in half, eliminating midday service, weekend service, and yes, even service to and from Giants games. Budget woes aren't new, of course. Other transit agencies are struggling as well. But Caltrain faces some unique obstacles, which will require creative solutions to surmount. That will be the focus of a community meeting sponsored by the Friends of Caltrain tomorrow morning in San Carlos, and it's our focus on this edition of Forum as well. Joining us to do that, Mike Rosenberg. He's a staff writer for the San Mateo County Times covering transportation issues along the peninsula. Mike, thanks for being with us. Hope Mike will be joining us shortly. Randy Rentschler is joining us as well. He's Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. The MTC is the Transportation Planning, Coordinating, and Financing Agency for the nine counties San Francisco Bay Area. Randy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Chuck Harvey joins us too. He is Deputy CEO of Caltrain and the San Mateo County Transit District. Mr. Harvey, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And Yuriko Kushimoto is here. She is the former mayor of Palo Alto and co-founder of Friends of Caltrain. Ms. Kushimoto, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, Chuck Harvey, why don't you start us out by outlining, I want to get to why there's a problem, but to begin, just the nature of the problem right now. If things don't change, outline for us what this $30 million budget deficit would mean.
Well, it's a serious issue for us, and it's really the genesis of the problem is that the member agencies of the three counties that saved Caltrain in 1992 have been subsidizing the service at a rate of about $35 to $40 million per year on top of the fares that we collect for the service. The service is an excellent service in terms of its fare box recovery ratio. However, all transit is subsidized, so the member agencies must subsidize the service, and all three of the parent agencies have their own structural budget issues today. SamTrans being the first to say we simply can't afford to continue to pay into Caltrain what we have been paying in the past, and that is creating a lowering of these member agency subsidies, creating the deficit budget hole that we are facing today. What that means for us is that we will be unable to run a level of service anywhere near what we're doing today.
And Mike Rosenberg, you've been covering this issue for a while for the San Mateo County Times. Is what's distinctive about what Chuck Harvey just described is that there's no givens with the funding for Caltrains. There's no designated funding stream that is kind of all up to whether or not these individual agencies, be that San Mateo County or San Francisco Muni, decide, well, this year we're going to give you this. They can't count on much. Is that right?
Right. There's no dedicated funding source for Caltrain. Most transit agencies have either a sales tax or a property tax or something that funds the service on a given year. With Caltrain, they sort of rely on Muni, VTA, and SamTrans to give them a certain amount every year, and most of the time they give it. But this year, they're going through their own funding problems. There's nothing really to stop them from just cutting back their subsidies, and that's what, as Chuck said, they're planning on doing this year.
And Randy Rentschler at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, how would you compare the obstacles, I guess, that Caltrain is facing right now compared to some of the other transit agencies in the Bay Area, whether that's BART or Muni, AC Transit, all the rest?
Well, you know, both of your guests have got into it that Caltrain has never had a dedicated funding source, even from the time the state ran it 20 years back. You know, Caltrain is in a similar situation to the train that's called the ACE train that comes in from the Central Valley, and also the Capital Corridor train as well, where member agencies have to contribute for those services because there isn't a dedicated district that raises its own revenue. So, look, they are in a unique space, and when you have a declining economic environment like we have, it puts stress on the way that it's organized.
And what are some of the options, Yuriko Kishimoto, that your group is considering, Friends of Caltrain, to try to make up the difference?
As you know, we're having a summit tomorrow morning, keynoted by Jackie Speer and Michael Brunenfeld of Sierra Club. So our purpose is going to be education about the situation we're talking about today, and also to hear from ideas from the public. The Silicon Valley Leadership Group actually had a forum last Friday. And so there's a number of types of solutions out there, I believe. The source of it, as you've been talking about, is Caltrain is an ironic situation where it is one of the highest performing transit agencies in the Bay Area of the 28 transit agencies.
By highest performing, meaning?
Meaning one of the Chuck mentioned subsidies, but it's actually the second least subsidized of the 20 transit agencies with 47% fare box recovery. So passengers pay almost half of the cost. But it alone lacks a dedicated funding. So there's probably a couple solutions. You know, one is we hope part of the solution is going to be some kind of dedicated funding. Could be a sales tax. It could be a gas tax. There's a number of them that we'll be talking about. And the other part is there's probably two other parts. One is containing costs, and that might be working with the regional rail system. It might be, looking for operational efficiencies, electrification in the long run, and also increasing ridership.
Yuriko Kishimoto is the former mayor of Palo Alto, co-founder of Friends of Caltrain. I want to dig into those various possibilities that Yuriko Kishimoto was outlining, Randy Rentschler, but would you, again, put us in context with other transit agencies? You heard Ms. Kishimoto say that it did well. Would you concur with that assessment, that it really is fairly efficient, that it recovers about as much costs from fares as most other transit agencies?
You know, it really does. The Metropolitan Transportation Commission right now is doing a substantial study called the Transit Sustainability Study to go see what we need to do over the long term for we can have a stable transit system in the Bay Area and not have our transit customers face the stress of annual service cuts and fare increases, which has occurred across the board. Now, Caltrain has certainly managed its system at least as good and probably better than all of its peers. It's had to raise fares. It certainly had to keep them in pace with inflation. They have high ridership. It's an effective service, there's no doubt. The issue with Caltrain has always been that it is subject to decisions by local entities, be it San Mateo County Transit, known as SamTrans, be it by San Francisco Muni, or be it by the Valley Transportation Agency, the VTA. And sometimes when their budgets are under stress, they have other priorities locally, and Caltrain finds itself always in this position of having to deal with a lot of uncertainty. You're seeing it this year because of SamTrans's budget.
Well, let's climb into some of the options. And Mike Rosenberg, as you've covered this issue over the years, what's your sense of the receptivity to that? You heard Yuriko Kishimoto suggest that one of the options would be to have a dedicated tax. As you've talked to local public officials, as you've been to various public meetings about this, does that seem like something that people would be receptive to in these particular times?
Well, it's a tough sell. They've never tried it before for that very reason. And it's a tough thing right now to pass a tax on a ballot, which is something that they would need to do. And it's unclear exactly how they would have to pass it, probably across all the three counties, San Francisco, San Mateo, in Santa Clara. The problem is most people still drive to work, and they might not necessarily see what Caltrain does. I mean, some estimates say that if you took all the Caltrain riders and put them on the freeway, it would cause all these sorts of traffic jams on the freeway, but people don't necessarily see that when they see Caltrain going by. So it's going to be tough for people who don't actually ride trains themselves or see the benefits of transit to pass a tax for something that they don't use.
And what would the nature of the tax be? Are we talking about something that would be a couple of cents to the gallon so that whenever you filled up your tank in Santa Clara, San Mateo counties, you would experience that? What exactly would the tax be?
I think that's up for us to all discuss. I mean, sales tax has been kind of a tried and true formula. People tend to think it's easier to pay sales tax, and for some reason they've been more resistant to gas tax. But we are talking about a minuscule amount per gallon. I mean, I think I have this figure, 1.3 billion gallons per year is sold in the three counties every year. So 1 cent really brings in $13 million. That 2 cents would bring in, $26 million. And as you know, gas tax fluctuates by 10, 20, 30 cents a gallon easily. And this really would be an investment that the voters and the riders and all commuters would agree for environmental purposes, economic development. I mean, we can't economically develop as a region unless we have a way to convey people around, and we can't build more freeways.
Are the mechanics, though, of getting a sales tax through, let alone the political realities of that, Chuck Harvey, such that none of this is likely to be put in place in time for the urgency of your situation, I suspect? You're not going to get this through, even if you're fortunate enough to make the case in time, will you?
No, you make an excellent point. And so I believe that the forum that we had with the Silicon Valley Leadership Group last Friday and the one we'll have tomorrow with Friends of Caltrain is really a multifaceted approach. We must come up with some strategies in the short term to survive and then see if we can position ourselves for some long-term solutions so that the system can thrive.
And what would some of those short-term options be?
Well, there are a number of things that we'll have to look at. I do agree with Rico that we must look at everything. We have to look at the cost side of the equation and see what we can do in any way we can to cut expenses. There may be some creative work that we can do with capital money and convert some capital money to operating money. That can be kind of challenging, but we can probably partner with Randy and the MTC to do some things.
Let's see if we can come up with a specific example and get Randy's reaction to that. What would you do? You take money that might be dedicated for rail upgrades or something and convert that into your operating budget?
Yeah, a good example might be that we get a portion of from the federal program some money to take care of, say, track maintenance, for example. Perhaps we can do an assessment on our track condition. We can minimize our track planning for the next coming year, and maybe some of that money can be flexed into helping us deal with this operating deficit. It's important to understand, though, that these are dangerous and there's consequences to these types
sure.
of decisions because we're just driving, again,
yep.
towards a cliff, unless we also are seeking a long-term thrive scenario as well.
Well, it's sort of finger-in-the-dike stuff. I mean, it's very much like what we see going on constantly in Sacramento to deal with recurring budget deficits. But Randy Ranchler, on that specific idea of having flexibility with funds that are dedicated for one thing but then using them in the other way that Chuck Harvey has described, do you have that kind of flexibility at the Metropolitan Transit Commission to allow that sort of flexibility to change what his budget situation is?
Well, we do, and we have done so. AC Transit has been the beneficiary of us using our funds that we get for capital purposes to try to keep that service going, and we've done it over the past number of years. Now, we did this thinking that it was just going to last for a little bit, the economy would come back, but as everyone knows, the sales tax generations, which is an underlying feature of the economy, have not come back. So are there things that we can do for Caltrain in the near term? Well, there certainly are. The issue, as Chuck was getting at, is we have to come to grips in the Bay Area with a long-term plan to sustain the transit mm-hmm. services that we have, not just on the peninsula for Caltrain or on the peninsula for buses, but across the whole Bay Area, which includes the H train, it includes the Capital Corridor, it includes a whole host of services that we need to get more serious about in the Bay Area.
So instead of having a Friends of Caltrain summit, are you suggesting, Randy Rentschler, that what we really need to do is look at this collectively?
Well, you know, my agency is now and has been for the past number of months with a significant and detailed study into the status of all the transit districts. Look, as Chuck pointed out, there are cost issues involved. We had a big economic boom. There's no doubt costs went up. We need to take a look at that. We've expanded services, and at this point, those services, which were expanded greatly, including Caltrain, are kind of coming back to make us revisit those decisions again. We believe at MPC that we need to do something for the whole Bay Area. The Caltrain is a serious issue, but it's also not alone.
Randy Rentschler is Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Mike Rosenberg at the San Mateo County Times, you just heard Randy mention the fact that Caltrain had boosted its service, added the baby bullet trains, did a lot to encourage greater ridership in recent years. Is it your sense that some of those decisions now are coming back, that have to be reexamined? How would, as you've looked at this over time, is this a situation where perhaps too much was done and now that's going to have to be pulled back again?
Well, actually, last time they expanded service, they added the baby bullet service back in the earlier part of last decade because they were going through the same thing. They were going through all these financial problems, so they thought that they could add service and increase revenue to sort of offset that. And it turns out that the baby bullet's been their most popular service, and it's the most economically efficient to run. And as we look at these cuts now that they're contemplating, it's the only sort of service that's not on the chopping block. Everything else is. So the baby bullet sort of was a breakthrough for Caltrain, and now they're looking at sort of cutting away up to everything else.
Well, let's go through what might be cut and then what the consequences of those cuts are. You're talking, Chuck Harvey, about eliminating all service except commute hours. You're talking about no more service on the weekends. What does that mean as far as the number of cars, for example, that might now be on the freeway? And then, Yuriko Kishimoto, maybe you can talk about what some of the business aspects are. But what is it just going to mean in terms of how daily life would change for people on the peninsula?
It's definitely a scary proposition. And rather than to estimate the changes in ridership, let me first give you even a larger statistic. If Caltrain closed entirely and we even eliminated all service and Caltrain ceased to exist, we would be putting 200 million pounds of CO2 into the air. All of those people that would be in their cars driving on the freeways and the arterial roads, imagine the congestion created by that amount of traffic. The average Caltrain trip is over 22 miles long, so our system on an annual basis has over 300 million passenger miles. All of those miles would have to go somewhere. And it's clear that there are many locations, including San Francisco, that could not take that volume of additional traffic. So the service cutbacks are certainly going to have an impact on traffic and congestion. The service plan to maintain the peak hour service is designed to try to keep running an efficient semi-express type service that will at least attract and retain our most loyal clients. And as Mike was alluding to, the baby bullet faster trains are certainly our most crowded trains today.
Elizabeth Deakin, University of California, Berkeley, city and regional planning professor, was quoted in the Examiner this morning as saying that even if only half of current Caltrain riders wound up using the car, you'd have to have 2.5 new lanes of 101 in order to handle the traffic, I mean, which we all know is not going to happen tomorrow. So it's a pretty scary prospect in terms of what 101 would look like, given that it's a pretty scary reality at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the San Mateo County Transportation Authority has been working for several years doing many, many highway improvements to improve the infrastructure on 101, but there simply isn't any more real estate to add lanes.
So what does this mean from a business point of view? As the former mayor of Palo Alto, Yuriko Kishimoto, and your other Silicon Valley leaders, Silicon Valley Leadership Group, in fact, has said that this is their number one priority to see if Caltrain can be sustained. It's a pretty obvious question, but why is it so crucial for business and for the South Bay economy?
It's absolutely critical. And I kind of see it as hope that we can turn this into a crystallizing moment for the Bay Area. to ask ourselves, you know, what do we want the Bay Area to look like in, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? We have some decisions to make. So historically, the peninsula has grown up around Caltrain. I mean, Caltrain started in 1862, and all the towns, the 15 cities along Caltrain between San Jose and San Francisco, Cisco and down to Gilroy, all the towns are built as walkable downtowns because Caltrain is there. So the whole look and feel of the peninsula, the walkability of the communities is there because of Caltrain.
And what are business leaders telling you about how this will affect their businesses, their employment?
It's absolutely critical to places like, for example, Stanford. Stanford's entire future growth, I mean, I know this as a former mayor of Palo Alto, and Stanford's entire future growth is predicated upon Caltrain being there, that they have a no net new trips agreement with the county. So they've actually, over the last 15 years, they've added millions of square feet without adding auto traffic because of Caltrain. I think it's about something like 17 to 20% of all their staff actually take Caltrain. 25% of SRI employees take Caltrain. So you're not going to have economic development unless you have a viable, attractive transit, and that's Caltrain.
There's obviously on lots of levels, Mike Rosenberg, whether you're talking about the traffic, the environmental impact, the business, the economic impact, all the things that you've been hearing, there's a case obviously that can be made. But give us sort of the political reality here. I mean, it's not unlike the debate we're hearing in Washington. Democrats are making the argument that you've got to invest in order to grow the economy. Republicans are saying there's nothing to invest. We can't. And you hear this debate play out now in California. So walk us through sort of the political reality. As persuasive as this case may be, how are you going to make that case in political terms?
We have to put it in a way that people can understand, even if they have no interest whatsoever in riding the train. And that's why you hear Chuck talking about the environmental impact, and you hear those stats about the how much traffic there would be on 101 if the train went away. I mean, people sort of have this nostalgic idea about Caltrain. They see it going through their towns every day, and the railroad's always there, and there's always activity there. But if you don't actually ride the train, the service went away, especially during the non-commute times. It wouldn't really have a direct impact on you unless you really thought about where all those riders would be going. So that's sort of where I'm seeing the argument being framed. That's sort of how you would have to frame it to a larger population, because it's going to have to take something from the larger population to actually get this done. You couldn't just increase fares. That wouldn't even make a dent.
And do you have a sense, Mike Rosenberg, about whether there is political will, whether that's at the state lawmaker level, the county elected official level, congressional representatives? We heard that Jackie Speier is going to be at this meeting tomorrow. Is there receptivity to push on that front, on the political side?
It's increasing. It's always sort of been an issue with Caltrain that they've always had these funding problems. Just in the last year or so, it's become a much bigger issue because it's one thing to cut two or three trains out of the schedule or raise fares by a quarter, but it's another thing to sort of say, wow, we're going to get rid of half of our service, essentially. And so that's why you're seeing people on the state and federal level who are local sort of chime in and try to help. But again, it's unclear whether from a real regional standpoint that's going to actually take hold.
Mike Rosenberg, staff writer covering peninsula transportation issues for the San Mateo County Times. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll take your calls and emails as well. What do you think about the importance of Caltrain? Is it something that deserves further support? Would you be willing to pay an additional sales tax or gas tax to keep Caltrain going? Are you a Caltrain rider? What do you think of the service? Do you see ways in which Caltrain costs could be cut? I'd like to hear all those suggestions and have you join our conversation. Here's the number, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the future of Caltrain. Caltrain is facing a $30 million budget deficit. to deal with that deficit, they would have to eliminate midday service, weekend service, service to Giants games, have to eliminate a station south of San Jose, those stations that lead all the way down to Gilroy, perhaps other stations as well. We've been talking about some of the options that might keep Caltrain going, and we'd like to hear your ideas as well. What do you think should be done to keep Caltrain, or do you think it's important to life on the peninsula in the South Bay? What are your thoughts on cutting costs or improving service? We'd welcome your calls at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Let's go to Shirley first in San Francisco. Shirley, go ahead, please.
First of all, I'd like to thank you very much for discussing this topic because it is extremely important for the whole peninsula as well as San Francisco. My name is Shirley Johnson, and I lead the Bikes on Board team. It's a project of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, and we are extremely supportive of Caltrain. We've done an analysis that shows if Caltrain were to increase bike capacity, it could earn $1 million more per year in ticket revenue. And the reason is that there's mismatched demand on Caltrain right now. Caltrain is running empty seats up and down that line while bicyclists are being denied service. We call it getting bumped. So there's not enough bike capacity, and there are too many empty seats. And empty seats just don't pay fares.
All right. So, let's get a – yeah, thanks, Shirley. That's a, okay. It's a great question. Thanks for raising it. Chuck Harvey, response, please.
Sure. First of all, from a bicycle onboard perspective – Caltrain is the most bike-friendly system in the entire planet. We have worked very diligently with the bicycle community, starting with a pilot program to allow a couple of bikes on per train to a system today that carries thousands of bikes per day.
But Shirley's point, I think, and I can as a sometime Caltrain rider, I can testify to that, that there is this phenomenon where you see the bike car filled and lots of empty seats elsewhere on the train.
Yes, and we understand her concern. In the last 18 months, Caltrain has increased onboard bike capacity by 32%. We are working on another project right now, which we hope to start very shortly, to increase an additional 18% onboard capacity for a total increase of 50% over the last 2 years.
Randy Rentschler at MTC, do you see bikes as part of the way out? What's the experience generally with transit systems? If they become more bike-friendly, is that a way of increasing revenue?
Well, listen, I think it's being more about customer-friendly, and bikes are that. Look, in the numbers that we work in really large numbers. Bikes are not a significant part of the market. Look, it's not to say they're not important. It's not to say that we don't need to be creative and flexible on the revenue side and the customer service side in our business. There is no doubt. Caltrain has done an outstanding job, not just on putting the baby bullets in and reorienting their service, but meeting the needs for bikes as well. So I answer this question as, a transit throughout the Bay Area needs to do a better job by focusing on the customer and not necessarily chasing the geography of the Bay Area. We need to focus on where the people actually ride the service.
Yes, if I could jump in. Well, first of all, I wanted to thank Shirley because Dr. Johnson is actually going to be joining us on the panel tomorrow as one of the solutions. And I think she really does address kind of the last mile, first mile issue of
meaning.
Well, basically how you get to the station and then how you get from the station to mm-hmm. your destination. So that's actually one reason why I wasn't able to take Caltrain here unless I had I would have had to change two buses to get here. But so I think bikes are a really great way of addressing that issue.
But Randy Rentschler's point is that it's not to say nickels and dimes, $1 million to quote Shirley's suggestion, even if that's optimistic, it's useful, obviously, but mm-hmm. it's not, in the end, it's not going to get you where you need to go, is Randy Rentschler's point, right?
Yes, that's obviously it's not the only solution. Yes, it's part of the solution for increasing ridership and also for the larger picture of how you combine, you know, land use and transportation in the Bay Area. So I think my hope is that bicycles become a much bigger part of the solution.
Shirley, thanks for the call. David is next in Redwood Shores. David, go ahead.
In commercial real estate, 3 out of 4 requirements on the peninsula, their first request, I want to be close to a baby bullet, first or second shuttle out, period. You can't find space around baby bullet stations. Downtown Redwood City has filled up. Meanwhile, North San Jose, Tremont, have 30% vacancy. Hmm. And this screams, contribute to Caltrans, make it better.
David, are you a developer?
Broker.
And so you're saying that there's a distinct kind of one-to-one relationship between future economic growth and proximity to specifically baby bullet stops.
Yeah, well, I'm not a post-industrialist that can tell you what the business climate's going to look like down the road or how people work. But you do see from the Sunnyvale baby bullet, Palo Alto, moving on a peninsula, 2% vacancy in most of those office markets compared to the suburban or outlying areas being north of 10%.
David,
so there's a desire to be there.
Yeah, David, thanks. It's an interesting point and makes very specific this question of why the Silicon Valley Leadership Committee, for example, is so concerned about maintaining Caltrain. Thanks for the call. Let's hear from Alvin next in Daly City. Alvin, go ahead, please. You're on.
Hi. One thing I was thinking about revisiting is that I know in the past they were thinking about combining all nine counties into one large transit agency. That way the funding will be, you know, evenly distributed between the different trains or bus or what have you. And also for a rider, it'd be easier to travel around the area. That way you'd have to have one fare for one fare for another. You just have one card to be able to travel around. And that way, if one agency is hurting, then the other agencies can help pick up the slack.
Alvin, thanks. It's a great question. Randy Rentschler, you want to take it on?
Well, this always seems to be the holy grail of the Bay Area Transit. You know, Bay Area Transit was created in the 1970s when we were a lot more dispersed and communities were, in fact, separated from where we are today. You know, in those days, Livermore was actually really far away. But now we're all in one big metro area, and we have gone some distance with this with the new Clipper card that allows a single card to be used across the Bay Area. But this issue with Caltrain gives folks a sense that even though it operates in three counties, it still has to compete for funding with the home agencies, which are county-based. And so if you make that issue region-wide across the whole nine-county Bay Area, you can see that we have a fragmented system. Now, there's no doubt the issue with Caltrain is raising awareness of its importance on the peninsula. But as the caller pointed out, Caltrain is not alone. And this is a big issue not just for the peninsula, but people across the whole Bay Area, particularly in the AC Transit Service Area and at VTA down in Santa Clara, have seen significant service cuts over the past couple of years because they're dealing with the same kind of crisis.
Well, wouldn't it also suggest, Chuck Harvey, that if there were more consolidation, that there would be cost cutting in that? I mean, instead of having to run a half a dozen or more different transit agencies circling the Bay, if you could combine those, it would seem logical that you would have some real efficiencies.
Well, it may sound logical, but it may actually be counterintuitive. One of the challenges you face when you begin to talk about consolidation is who is consolidating what. And if you look at cost structures, and this is where Randy and MTC's study on the Transit Sustainability Project is so critical to us. If we look at the highest cost agencies in terms of their costs, their labor costs, how egregious perhaps some of their work rules and agreements are, these are the large agencies. So if these large agencies are going to consolidate other smaller agencies in, will it in fact save money or will it increase the costs of the services that the smaller agencies are running today?
I understand the problem, but it still seems to have administrative officers, for example, for a bunch of different agencies as opposed to sort of consolidating, that there are opportunities there. I understand the problems, but there are opportunities too, yeah?
Oh, I agree. There could be. And that's why it's so important. Again, in the short term, that's a long-term issue that'll be very political,
right,
and we need to work out. Caltrain, for example, is one of the lowest administrative overheads of any transit agency. We're at less than 6%, trying to maintain that very low.
You also have these, as I understand it, and Mike, please chime in on this, Mike Rosenberg of the San Mateo County Times. But I remember, in fact, Mike, let me just go to you first because you wrote the article that I read, and that is that one of the oddities that Caltrain has to contend with is that they can't really control their labor costs, right? Because some of that is governed by Amtrak. So what an engineer or conductor makes falls under the national Amtrak contract. So it's not something that these local officials can really control. Is that I'm remembering your article, at least, in that vein. Correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah,
please.
In Caltrain's case, they're unlike BART and VTA in that they actually contract out to get their sort of line-level employees. So they have Amtrak employees work on the system as the engineers and the conductors, and they end up paying their salaries to operate the service. And in doing the research on the employee salaries, it turned out that their average salary, and actually the composite salary of all the employees, rose by about 40% in the last 3 years, which in and of itself seems unbelievable when you think about Caltrain's financial problems. But then you look at how it actually happened, and you see Amtrak's national labor negotiations are actually done in a way that Caltrain basically has to pick up the tab no matter what is negotiated in Washington, and they don't have a seat at the table. And that's just sort of the deal that they get into when they contract out. And that's a contract that's going to be expiring sometime this summer.
Yuriko Kishimoto, you wanted to add something in?
Yes, and I just wanted to say, just, you know, from the, if you look at the commute patterns of the Bay Area, and from the rider's point of view, I mean, I personally think it's worth looking at doing, if not consolidation, but definitely much better coordination between Caltrain and ACE and hopefully Dumbarton Rail, because that's a lot of the commute patterns. You know, people coming in from the East Bay and maybe even Livermore into the employment centers of the Bay Area, which, you know, Palo Alto, Mountain View, Sunnyvale. So I would hope that we look at kind of a merging of some of the commute rail.
Dimitri wants to join in on that same point in San Jose. Dimitri, go ahead.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. What's your point, please?
So I changed jobs a couple of years ago, and I started working in Burlingame, commuting from San Jose. And I think Caltrain is a great service. I wanted to use it a lot. And the point that I want to make is that if you look at various dimensions, such as cost to ride versus the cost of driving, if you look at the time it takes with all connections, if you look at availability of internet, which isn't available on Caltrain, to the best of my knowledge, even to date, if you look at integration with the rest of the services like VTA, all of these dimensions are not in favor of Caltrain. So me driving today, I would definitely support 2 cents tech just to keep Caltrain there. But my point is that really the level of service needs to be better. And as far as integration with the rest of the services like VTA, the train arrives at San Jose Diridon station and one needs to wait 40 minutes for a VTA tram that just left. I think this is just ridiculous.
Dimitri,
and I took this point with VTA. VTA never cared. So this needs to be worked out, I think.
Dimitri, thanks for the call.
Thanks so much.
Chuck Harvey, a response, please.
I think that Dimitri's hit on a couple of really great points. Certainly the integration with other systems is something that we constantly battle with. Every system being independent, sometimes coordination is difficult, and Caltrain's reached out to VTA and others to try to match up our schedules with their light rail system at various stations. Challenging when you have multiple stops and time points to do. But I also agree with him in terms of Caltrain needing to continue to develop its services, perhaps adding Wi-Fi internet, increasing frequency and speed so that we are truly competitive with the automobile. Our baby bullets certainly are very competitive in the peak hour with automobile traffic.
Number of people writing in on this same question, as you suggest, Randy Rentschler, does seem to be sort of the holy grail of this topic about merging services. John writes in, I live in the East Bay. Occasionally travel down to Palo Alto. I've always found it strange that there seems to be no joint marketing by BART and Caltrain to build up ridership up and down the peninsula. Jason writes in, I'm a daily Caltrain rider from San Francisco. I can't understand why these services are not merged. Wouldn't it be more efficient if and also make for a better rider experience? Then Jason goes on to pose something else. Randy Rentschler, if you can chime in on this. What about electrification? Is that on the table?
Well, let's just get to the electrification issue first. Look, there's no doubt that electrification is going to be critical for the peninsula. Getting rid of these diesel trains would be great on air quality grounds. Electrification allows for quicker acceleration. There's a lot of benefits to it. In addition, look, the Caltrain line is the high-speed rail line in California, and they've already started to build it in the valley. And two big city pairs, L.A., San Francisco, Washington, D.C., New York, those are the markets that make high-speed rail work. So the peninsula is a very critical transportation corridor into the future. It will connect high-speed rail to an international airport of some note in the peninsula. So look, electrification is part of it, but it's no doubt it's going to be part and parcel to high-speed rail.
Randy Rentschler, again, the Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Derek writes in with two ideas to increase Caltrain revenue. He suggests, first of all, have someone check tickets as passengers board. It's an interesting question. I mean, I would have to say, as someone who rides Caltrain about once a week, Chuck Harvey, that I get my ticket checked maybe one out of five times. It's pretty easy to game the system. How much of an issue would that be? How much would that do to increase revenues to really make sure people actually have tickets?
Well, I'd like to dispel a little bit of the myth on this. Caltrain is running what is typically known as a proof of payment system. We rely upon folks to be honest and buy their tickets, and then we have a system of checks and balances that ensures that that happens. While you may not have your ticket checked frequently, we have enough roving fare inspection and we write enough citations that our statistical average of fare evasion is way, way under 1%.
So even though I'm not being checked, if I were actually to walk up and down my train car and ask people myself, I would find that the vast majority of people really do have tickets?
You would find that 99%+ of everybody has tickets.
Okay. Chick writes in, no, no, no to more taxes. 2.5 lanes would be needed on 101 to accommodate the increase of traffic. That kind of hyperbolic BS drives me crazy. So what do you say to that, Yuriko Kishimoto?
I'm afraid it's not hyperbole. It's 40,000 riders, and most of that ridership is during the commute time. And given the size of the population in the Bay Area, you might think it's small. But if you look at the constraint is in the commute hours, and there's no doubt that adding 5,000 people per hour to 101 and 280 is going to be disastrous.
No hyperbole. Okay.
No hyperbole, yes.
Srini in Palo Alto has our next question. Srini, go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. You might have considered all revenue sources, including gas taxes, sales tax, and property tax. Here I'm going to suggest two more things, maybe earlier experimented. There's encouraging Bay Area employers and companies to contribute per employee basis, and in return, providing some passes or tickets to them. This will increase the ridership and the fixed revenue source. And the second suggestion is providing some adoption of coaches to some big companies in the Bay Area. So, some, for example, Oracle can adopt one coach and the expenses they can bear. So we can advertise that some basic things we can provide so that we can get fixed revenue sources.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Srini, thanks.
Yeah.
Yes, Yurika Kishimoto, please.
Yes, I mean, I think that point about the more employers providing that employee benefit is really critical. I've seen some numbers for BART that half the BART riders benefit from those kind of programs, and those are tax deductible. So that it saves money for the employer, saves money for the employee. It brings people into transit. And so I think that's part of this transformation that I hope, you know, we turn this crisis into an opportunity. And the opportunity is that more and more employers do provide that, and that increases the entire pie.
And Randy Rentschler, again, in terms of sort of piecing this all together, is this a small piece, medium piece? Is this the kind of thing that could make a difference?
Well, look, it can make a difference over the long haul. My agency is going to run a bill to try to expand the polar benefit options in this state, this legislative cycle. But listen, I think the main themes here are basically the Bay Area is going through a tough economic time. It's redounding down to these transit districts. If we value these services and we want what they offer, we're going to have to do something on the revenue side, not just for Caltrain, but for all of them. Caltrain is a very important service on the peninsula, but so are many others. And I think that's going to be the big challenge for the Bay Area is to come to grips with the things we want and our willingness to pay for them.
Mm-hmm. And let's go to Frank next in Menlo Park. Frank, I'm afraid we're bumping up against a break, but your question, please.
Yeah, I think somebody mentioned high-speed rail, and I think that's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Mm. As you know, the High-Speed Rail Authority is talking about spending billions of taxpayer dollars to run the high-speed rail from San Jose to San Francisco, which obviously would be another duplicate train system. It makes absolutely no sense. And if you could just take a few of those billions and use it to upgrade Caltrain, it would be a much better way to spend the money. And my understanding of that proposition that the voters passed 2 years ago, some of that money was supposed to be designed to improve regional train services, not just this high-speed bullet train from L.A.
Frank, thanks. Thanks for the question. Good question, Chuck Harvey. It does seem anomalous in some ways that we would be considering this gargantuan investment in high-speed rail when you need just a little bit, to, by comparison, to keep going.
Well, certainly it's a it does appear to be the 800-pound gorilla out there, but the prospect of a high-speed rail service in California is maybe another public policy discussion that would take us another show to have. But the use of high-speed rail on the Caltrain corridor, sharing the potential investments in the infrastructure, is absolutely a wise way to go. The fact that the High-Speed Rail Authority is considering running to San Francisco downtown provides an opportunity for us to leverage those funds that the caller mentioned to electrify our railroad, modernize it, and we would get the benefit of improved service.
Mm-hmm. Chuck Harvey is the deputy CEO of Caltrain and the San Mateo County Transit District. He's joined us as we've been talking about the future of Caltrain along with Randy Rentschler, the Director of Legislation and Public Affairs at the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, Yuriko Kishimoto of the Friends of Caltrain Group, which again will be meeting tomorrow morning in San Carlos. Mike Rosenberg has been with us as well, staff writer for the San Mateo County Times. As you know, this is the time when we do our fundraising for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. Continue our conversation now with Elaine joining us next in San Francisco. Elaine, go ahead, please.
Yes, I have a comment on the regional issue. I live in San Francisco, and I want to go to an event in Sunnyvale, but I'm unable to do it because of the schedule and because of the stops that the Caltrain provides. It would be a benefit regionally because I would go to this event and I would spend money. I would buy a train fare. I would patronize restaurants. I would go to the event. And it's a very much a regional issue.
Elaine, thanks. Thanks for the call. Mm-hmm. Chuck Harvey, a response?
Well, I think Elaine's really nailed the crux of what we have to do beyond the survival mode that we're looking at this year. In order for Caltrain to thrive into the future, the prospect of electrification and being able to run more frequent service with more frequent stopping patterns would provide much more access to the system all along all the communities along the right-of-way. Right now, we're primarily designed in our service pattern for those morning work commuters. But Elaine's point is a great one. If we can modernize the system, then it can serve even other markets that we can't attract today.
I mean, the catch-22 you face, in a way, is one that faces all mass transit, which is people ride it if they can count on it, if it's reliable, if it's convenient, if there's constant ways that you can catch the train, and that it's nearby. Doing all of that takes money, which you don't have. So around and around you go.
Yeah, it's kind of a vicious circle. So you have to look at the market that's going to give you the maximum return on investment. But Caltrain, and given what's going to happen in the peninsula, if we're going to provide housing opportunities, job opportunities, recreational opportunities, and an infill development type of a market, Caltrain has to become a modernized, thriving system.
Some comments coming in from our website. Rachel writes in, I'm 42. I have two elementary school-age kids. I don't use Caltrain, nor do I live nearby and hear about it. However, if I were 22, single, and drove to work, I think many people would resonate with the idea and its future for the Bay Area. Another person wrote in about why stop at midnight? I'm a young person. I would ride Caltrain if he went all through the night. So it's this problem of being able to provide what people want and not having enough of it to do. Yuriko Kishimoto, you wanted to add something more?
Yes. I mean, the last couple comments, I mean, those type of the callers are exactly the reason why we're doing the Friends of Caltrain Summit tomorrow morning. And people can get that information on the friendsofcaltrain.com. But it's really the residents of the three counties need to come together to protect the transit that links us all, basically. Because it is a regional solution, that's why the residents of the three counties need to come together.
And to Helen in San Carlos. Helen, go ahead, please.
Oh, hi. I'm an occasional Caltrain rider, although I've been riding Caltrain probably for 25 years on an occasional basis. I would ride it more often if not for the fact that to get from the Caltrain station in San Francisco to my office in Civic Center is a 20-minute to half-hour ride on Muni. And there seems to be virtually no coordination between Muni and Caltrain in order to provide better service to people who are going somewhere other than to the financial district. So that's a concern. It takes me an hour and 15 minutes to take the train and 40 minutes to drive to my office. But I take the train occasionally because I'm committed to using public transit. And by the way, I couldn't disagree more with the fellow who says we should take that money and not build the high-speed rail. But that's a subject for another show.
Right. Okay, Helen, well, thanks. Thanks for the call. You raised a good question. Yuriko Kishimoto raised it earlier, too. I walk from the Caltrain station in San Francisco to KQED because it's honestly the fastest way to do it. It's a 25-minute walk, but it's faster than taking two different bus rides. So, Randy Rentschler, what about that part of the problem? I know you can't speak for Muni, but that's a difficulty, isn't it? Just that the location of the Caltrain station in the city itself.
Well, listen, it is. I mean, it seems as though the Bay Area spent the last 40 years building a system that's convenient for people to drive. And the folks who are committed to transit have to live with that reality, too, because things are placed convenient for cars, not just shopping malls, but except for Pac Bell Park, I guess now the new AT&T Park, often it's the case with many different venues. But the issue for transit, I think, is that it's a play to the future. Chuck Harvey mentioned it. As gas prices increase, as our need to be more conscious about climate change and other things, we need robust, healthy, good, solid transit systems. And this challenge for Caltrain essentially is that challenge.
And again, if you're interested in speaking out about this subject, there will be a community meeting about the future of Caltrain. It'll take place 8:30 at the San Mateo County Transit headquarters in San Carlos, 8:30 tomorrow morning. The website, if you'd like to find out more,
is friendsofcaltrain.com.
Friendsofcaltrain.com. Yuriko Kishimoto is the former mayor of Palo Alto, co-founder of Friends of Caltrain. Thanks for being with us this morning.
It's been a pleasure.
Randy Rentschler, Director of Legislation and Public Affairs for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission. Randy, thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Chuck Harvey was with us as well, Deputy CEO of Caltrain and San Mateo County Transit District. Chuck, thanks.
Thank you.
And Mike Rosenberg, who's been doing some good reporting on this topic for the San Mateo County Times. Mike, thanks for adding your perspective as well.
Thanks for having me.
Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Christina Russo. Danny Bringer is our engineer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. And Raul Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.